How I wanted to do
it. Recess, SCR 11.
Mr. Chairman, move SCR 11 to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Cory moves SCR 11 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion, objection, so ordered. Let's see, Senator Yee's bill, right? Yes, okay. Closed work session, open public hearing, 2659. Jenny Lang, Paul Romaine, John Powell.
He coming up? No, John's not moving. Why isn't Powell moving? Why isn't Romaine moving?
Yeah, he's got he'll come up in a second. Yeah. Yeah, please. Yeah. Jenny, you just kind of lead us through where you're headed, and we'll hear from everybody else.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jenny Lang. I represent Quest, and I'm here to talk about House Bill 2659. You should have...
Which one's which now?
The 11s.
Are you talking to the 11s?
I am talking to Ann Grost, as well as the dash 11 amendments.
Okay. And Armstrong's the...
Tens
and 12s. What are the 9s? Anything?
Is there 9s?
9s were, I think, of... prior version okay. That you, yeah, we don't,
okay,
don't need. So what I would like to do first is just take you through the A and Grost version of the bill. There are two changes that we are suggesting that refer to the Senate Bill 622 regulatory structure that we put in place in 1999. The first change is on the top of page 2 at line 3 to add the three words intrastate switched access. And essentially, we believe that was a drafting issue. Sub 3 of section 1 sets up the price cap regulatory structure. And if you will notice on page 1, it at line 22, it refers to tariff rate of intrastate switched access and retail telecommunications services. Sub 4, beginning at line 2 on page 2, is then the implementation of the price cap regulatory regime. And at line 3, intrastate switched access was not included as a clause. Put that in to make this construction of the two paragraphs consistent. The other change is in sub 10 on page 3, starting at line 6. And this language is added in order to cover new Public Utility Commission ordered extended area service routes between communities. Since EAS is currently classified as a non-basic service by the PUC's rules and therefore is price capped, we don't have a way to recover costs and the lost net revenues under the current statute, since we can't price EAS above the price cap. In the House, the Public Utility Commission testified in support of both of these changes, and we would appreciate your support as well.
So the PUC was okay with this concept?
Correct.
Okay.
The dash 11s come to you as a result of Quest's process to get back into the long distance business, as I refer to it. As part of the Federal Telecommunications Act of 1996, there is a section which sets up the requirements that the company must meet in order to apply to both the Public Utility Commission at the state level and then to the Federal Communications Commission in order to re-enter the long-distance business. The Dash 11s on page 1, beginning at line 8 through 12, set up the federal statutory structure that we're referring to. At line 12, 47 U.S.C. is the Federal Telecommunications Act of 1996, and 271 is the section that sets up the requirements that we have to meet in order to get back in. Part of that is a performance assurance plan that we must implement and meet the specifics of, which generally refers to all of the things that we need to do in order to make sure that competitors are able to work with our systems and make sure that moving customers back and forth between us and competitors is not discriminatory in any way. I'd like to have you believe that we are going to do that perfectly the first time out and that we would not be subject to any fines or penalties under this section, but my guess is that there are going to be some. So our proposal is that rather than whatever this amount of money might be, just go into the general fund of the state, that on page 4 it would direct any monies coming from fines as a result of not meeting all of the requirements of the performance assurance plan into the school technology account that was established as part of Senate Bill 622 in 1999.
And that's what the 11s do.
Correct.
Okay. John?
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and members of the committee. My name is John Powell, representing AT&T. Mr. Chairman, I'll refine my remarks to the amendments that were just described, the A11s. Mr. Chairman, AT&T is one of the competitors that would be affected if the arrangements with the incumbents do not go right, and so these penalties would be a result of a situation where a competitor was harmed. We believe that taking this narrow section of the law and sending the penalty money to a particular account different from the general fund or being handled different than other penalties should be part of a broader strategy and look by the legislative process. These were not discussed on the House side, and again, we believe that just to begin each interest in under the FUC or under the utility statutes to start directing their penalty money to different accounts should be looked at in a broader context than this one. This area of the law has nothing to do with Senate Bill 622. This area of the law has to do with the Federal Telecommunications Act, which was designed to spur competition. So there is really no direct relationship to 622 or to this particular fund. So, again, we would just recommend that the legislature let an interim group or some other people look at the general area of fines, where they go and what they fund, rather than doing it piecemeal like this.
Sure. How about the basic bill?
Mr. Chairman, we... on the basic bill, it testified on the other side concerning the access portion, the interstate switch access. We were told by the PUC that this will not change any regulatory standards that they currently have on access charges, which is very much a concern to long-distance carriers because we pay those to complete the call into the local jurisdiction. You pay an originating access and an access charge on the other end, which are a pretty substantial portion of what you pay for long-distance service. So we're very concerned about that. We're told that this does not in any way prohibit the PUC from regulating access charges, and so we withdrew our opposition.
Okay. Paul, I'm sorry, Senator Beyer.
Just to clarify, John, I understand why the
competing companies would be concerned that the incumbents would meet all of the standards set out in federal law. But it's unclear to me why the competitors would care whether the money, any fines arising out of violations in those agreements would go into the general fund versus into an education fund.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer, I think that's a very good question, and it's one that until these, in fact, the first set of these amendments had it bifurcated into two separate funds. And I'm not sure that there is a good policy reason for putting the money into this fund. That is, I don't know what the overall policy would be. If you want all fines on telecommunications to go into this fund, and there was a policy reason for doing that, that I think that would be one thing. But for our company, for example, to come in and say, okay, we would like our fine money to go into a different account. Again, I think that there should be a specific reason for that, other than it's there.
What is the specific reason, Jenny? These are your amendments, correct?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I believe that the specific reason we had in mind is that we know that schools are struggling to have enough money for technology purposes, and there was already a fund established under Senate Bill 622. We're not certain how much money it's going to be, and it just seemed that there was some logic to having it go to something that was telecommunications related that might be useful to particularly the education community. That's as specific as we got.
Why didn't you do this in the House?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we are literally in the midst of this process of working through the checklist of issues at the Public Utility Commission, and there have been a number of workshops being held at the commission level. The performance assurance plan was only just established and okayed during one of those workshop sessions since the beginning of this legislative session, so it hadn't been an issue when we did the original drafting of the bill.
Senator Menas.
Yeah, John, who do you represent?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Menas, AT&T.
You represent AT&T, the long-distance carrier and cell phone.
Mr. Chairman, yes, and broadband cable.
Broadband cable.
And also authorized to be a competitor of at any level in telecommunications.
Well, tell me, I think Senator Beyer's question is a good one. Why would you care where to find money? What difference does it make?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Menas, again, penalty money I think traditionally for most agencies goes to the general fund and or back into an agency that's regulating whoever it is that's been penalized. Again, we think it's a broader policy issue as to where penalty money should go.
What are the policy issues?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Menas, the policy issues would be at what point is a regulator incented, for example, to fund programs through penalties would be one. I guess there's just no rationale that we see of beginning a series of penalty funds for various specific purposes. And if there are those purposes, then we think that perhaps all the penalty money from fines on regulated utilities should be that fund.
So if I understand what you're saying, the main objection is that you think there might be an incentive to impose penalties so that you can fund a particular program.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Menas, that's one of the reasons that normally under a penalty provision, and again maybe relating it to law enforcement, if the fine money for violations goes into funding the agency that writes the tickets, then sometimes there's a conflict there in terms of motivations and that sort of thing. Those issues come up. And that's why, again, stress the fact that we don't oppose this fund in any way or the good that it might do. The general fund is a repository where a good share of the money goes to education and can go to various accounts.
Okay. Paul.
Mr. Chair.
Start all over.
Members of the committee, thank you. I'm Paul Romaine. I'm an attorney in Portland, and I represent MCI WorldCom. And we are opposed to a few provisions of this bill. And let me kind of start with the last thing, which are the A11 amendments. I don't want to classify our opposition as major to the A11 amendments. It's just I'm always constantly amazed how people can take lemons and make lemonade. What happened, and I think it's a great political move, and it's a great PR move, and I would probably try and do the same thing, but basically what you're doing is you're saying, all right, every time you get fined for doing something you're not supposed to be doing or not doing it fast enough or whatever it is, you get to take the money and blow up the check and give it to this wonderful fund. So it's kind of like, you know, every time you do bad, you get to give to the American Cancer Society. Well, that's kind of good. You gave a lot of money to the American Cancer Society. It's just the implications of it that we have a problem with. It's not a make or break thing, and it's, you know, we just don't like the theory. If you've done something wrong, we're competing or trying to compete with these people, and what happens is all of a sudden they get a good PR hit out of something that was a negative PR hit. That's the whole theory behind the fund, and I mean, I think it was a brilliant idea that whoever came up with it. It's a great idea.
Well, why don't you guys make a lot of mistakes and you have the same PR?
Oh, we make a lot of mistakes, Senator, unfortunately.
But you'd be more comfortable this money just go straight in the general fund?
Mr. Chair, I guess, yeah, just from a just not wanting to see the lemonade made out of the lemons, okay. But that's basically where we come from, right, in support of AT&T.
So let me ask you this question. Would you be more comfortable, all of you, if you made an amendment on page 4, line 16, instead of saying shall be placed in the school technology account, it says may be upon legislative approval be placed in the school technology account? In other words, the monies would go into a holding account until the next legislative assembly, and the legislature can direct or not direct those monies.
Mr. Chair, Senator Minnis, from my perspective, you're already spending way too much time on all this, but if that would...
spend a lot of time on a lot of stuff that doesn't go anywhere.
And not wanting to prolong the session into Saturday or Sunday. All I'm saying is that would probably be better from our perspective. You can make a judgment call at that point. But again, you have to understand that you're saying to a company, all right, you're not doing things fast enough. We can't connect. We can't do all these things. They get fined because we can't do this stuff, part of the checklist. Now all of a sudden they get to take the fines and contribute it to this nice fund. It's a good idea.
It's the legislature side.
Right. That would be fine with me. And I think you should study this for the next 2 years and put that in.
Mr. Chair.
Senator
Beyer.
So, Ginny, is the bill worth passing without the A11s?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer, yes.
Okay. And the A11s is just what happens with the fines, where the money goes. That's essentially what it does.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer, yes.
So I guess the issue and the dispute then is the perception of whether there is, I guess there are two issues. One is, in terms of the business world, the perception is, does Quest, if it gets fined, get a public relations benefit by having the money go to the technology fund? And on the public policy side is the question of most fines now going to the general fund from all sources, and theoretically that's to keep keeps the cops from trying to get the money coming back at them. That's the old theory of it.
We like that. I think
you like that one. I know.
Wrong analogy.
Seems like you've dealt with that before. I know.
We've got a measure three problem here. Then if we keep on going, right?
Yeah. No, I can't perceive a big problem one way or another.
One over the other. I'm sorry.
That was only my first problem. I'd like to speak to the rest of the bill. Yeah. I was simply starting from the end to support my friend John, but I have much greater problems.
No, you don't like the bill.
Well, let me go back and let me tell you our major problems. First of all, you have to understand where this originated. This was a gut and stuff in the House, and there were two things that were originally proposed. The first one, dealing with the intrastate switched access, which you see on page 2, line 3. That was not the original language, and that's why we opposed that language. The original language was to amend the paragraph to allow intrastate switched access charges to be price capped on the basis of the whole service, not the elements of the service. We had a very big problem with that because that was a big change, we believed, and the PUC believed, from the current law. So it was amended to come into what you see in the bill, which the PUC and we support, because it basically doesn't change anything. It basically says that intrastate switched access is price capped. And that's always been the assumption that it was price capped, but that's basically it. Now, intrastate switched access, for those of you who don't know, is what we pay to connect to the local end. Basically, we pay it on originating a call, we pay it on terminating a call, and that's the biggest sort of expense we have, basically, in the long distance. So we get very concerned about driving that price down. So that was changed, and we're fine with that portion of the bill. The portion that we're not fine with is on page 3, the paragraph dealing with extended area service. And let me explain why we have a problem with it. EAS is, for those of you who don't know, the idea where, in effect, your call is a local call. You pay a flat fee or a measured rate or something, but not an intrastate long distance. Well, we compete for that intrastate long distance. So does AT&T, so does Quest. We all compete for that caller. So if you have a call, say, from Portland to or Eugene to Salem right now, we're competing for that call. If you now say, for whatever reason, that's going to be part of EAS, and you take it out of competition, you take away a market for us. We no longer can compete. So nobody's competing. So what we have a problem with is the words on line 8, which say, and lost net revenues. We don't have a problem with recovering all costs attributable to implementing new EAS, but it's the lost net revenue portion of it that we have a problem with. And what you've done is, in effect, taken a chunk and taken it out of competition. Really, what you're trying to do is be half pregnant right now, because 2 years ago you passed 622, which got you into the whole theory that we were all going to be deregulated and we're going to all compete for all this stuff. And now, the incumbent wants to be pretty much guaranteed that they get their revenue back. I don't blame them, but it takes an area out of competition for us, for AT&T, for Sprint, for anybody else out there. That's why we have a problem with that particular provision. We don't have, I know there was at one point during conversations about why don't we come in and talk about this at the PUC all the time, whenever there's an EAS and a petition for extended area service. And the answer is very simple. We don't have the resources. You know, WorldCom's a huge company, absolutely huge. We're all over the world. We are in every state, but we're a little bits in every state. We have to pick and choose where you go in, so you don't go in. If you take out the words and lost net revenues, the PUC could still decide how to set up the cost on this, the pricing on it. If you leave it in, they have no discretion. They have to give them back their lost net revenues.
Senator Minnis.
Help me understand this again. I'm getting confused, because you're saying that you're a big corporation, we've got lots of little bitty components here and there, and somehow these guys are the big guys on the block, and if you give them this, then we just can't compete. But you can't compete because of why?
Mr. Chair, Senator Minnis, if you put something, I'll take your area. Say Gresham was a long-distance, intrastate long-distance call to downtown Portland. It's not now. Say Wood Village, to call from Portland to Wood Village at one point might have been, probably wasn't, intrastate long-distance call, where you'd be paying separately for that call every time you made it. Extended area service, well, right now, if you have a long-distance call, for example, Salem to Portland, intrastate long-distance, you, the consumer, can choose what long-distance carrier you're going to use for that call. Could be us. Could be your local provider, Quest, because intrastate.
Okay, so you're suggesting that this is going to allow them to provide the service at a much greater reduced cost?
No.
You're going to be able to provide out?
No, we won't be able to provide it. Once you take an area,
because
it's not long distance anymore. It becomes, in effect, a local call. You pay a flat fee or a measured fee, but it's not up for, you can't say I want MCI or WorldCom or AT&T or Sprint to carry that call anymore. It's gone.
Mr. Chairman?
So you're, is MCI against EASs?
Actually, Mr. Chair, I haven't, part of the problem with the end of the session things coming in is we don't have a chance to get a lot of feedback from clients, especially around the 4th of July. But most long-distance carriers, I believe, do not like the concept of extended area service because you take away a chunk that we can compete for.
Most customers love them.
Mr. Chair, most customers of EAS, you'll get people petitioning for an extended area service. Most of them really don't understand what they're paying for. Most of them, basically, because they're still paying for those phone calls.
I can call Bonanza now. It's a local call.
I know.
It makes me happier than a clam.
But, Mr. Chair, what you should do is look on your bill. Mr. Chair, you should look on your telephone bill and see how much it's costing you on a flat basis to call Bonanza.
35 cents.
How much?
Mm-hmm. And how many times do you call Bonanza?
It's none of your business.
Did you have a question?
No.
Okay, Jenny.
Mr. Chairman, members, I was just going to remark that that the Public Utility Commission is the one that decides whether an EAS route is put into place. They are generated by virtue of initiatives that come from consumers in an area. So there's nothing here that changes any of that. And if other companies want to come in and say, you know, this is a really lucrative long-distance route for us, and we think this one ought not be put into place, they would have every right and responsibility, actually, to do so in the long process that these routes go through at the commission.
Okay. Mike Dewey?
Thank you.
Thanks. You going to put us out of our misery?
Jenny, can I ask you a question?
I'm sorry, Jenny.
I got to ask you a question because I don't understand this. Do the 8-11 amendments hold post-secondary education harmless regard to 622 public access money?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Courtney, yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Mike Dewey, representing the Oregon Cable Telecommunications Association. Had 622 not passed, I would not be here speaking, but recognizing some experience we have on 622. 622, as you know, has Quest making investments in rural infrastructure. And in so doing, a number of those investments are DSL service, which is nice. It's a high-speed data service that they provide. And they are now providing that service in rural communities. Arguably, where we're providing high-speed cable service on their own without the public monies, they would be making that investment.
And so in looking at that, one of the concerns that we have with this amendment, first is it's incremental. Now, we love the school technology account. We think that's wonderful. And all the money we can put to schools that is useful, that makes a lot of sense. In part because the investment they make in schools is part of the public switch network. It's not different networks. It is part of the same network. And a concern that we have is it's going to be incremental investments that they're going to make in plant to enhance their plant in order to get to a school from the penalties that they pay, which could advantage them, number one. Secondly, understand this. The more money that they invest in the schools, the more money that comes back to them, because there will be revenues from the services that they provide. The infrastructure that they provide is low cost from the account. But in order to service those accounts, there is revenue coming back to them. So they do benefit by having these penalties go to this particular account. I think it's an important public policy. That's why we have concerns about it. But be very clear, we are very favorable, and we do make investments in schools and infrastructure, and we need to continue to do that. So please don't have my remarks reflect that we're opposed to that. We don't think it's fair in terms of a level playing field. Thank you.
I'm not clear what you just said. What was the point you were trying to make, Mike?
Well, the point I'm making is you're going to have, under the A11s, there's going to now be money from the penalties go to infrastructure for schools, telecommunications, and the like.
Right.
Okay. And when they provide the infrastructure and the services, T1, whatever the case may be, when they provide that, in order to provide those services, they're receiving revenue back in order to provide those services. It's not free. Okay. And so the more investments they make, arguably the more money comes back to them in terms of revenues to pay for those services. And that's why, you know, this is a good idea for Quest, because there's going to be more money in the account, and therefore more money coming back to them. Now, it's not going to be, who knows how much money it's going to be. We have no idea how much money it's going to be. Hopefully it's not millions and millions of dollars. But in that case, we're making those investments also.
So your argument is that the school technology fund was to assist schools in getting hooked up to broadband.
Yes.
And if I understand you, what you're saying is by helping them get hooked up to a telecom provider other than a cable company, it's in effect generating an ongoing revenue stream. Is that your issue?
There are revenues that are derived back to them in order to provide the services. It's not all free. It's low cost, and it's the T1 line is not going to be as expensive as it would be to a private business. But there will be revenue derived back to them. If there's not, and you know, if I'm wrong, you know, but okay. Normally the case is, and North Carolina was a good example. A lot of money was put into schools for wonderful telecommunications, and a couple of years later, the schools couldn't afford the bill for all these wonderful services because of what it cost them after the subsidy ran out. Now, if it's all free, then I wouldn't have a problem with that part. But I can't imagine it's all free.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Ken Armstrong. This has nothing new what we're talking about, but this is the stuff, the dash tens.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. Ken Armstrong, representing the Northwest Public Communications Council. We're the independent, smaller payphone folks around the state of Oregon. In Oregon, our 15 members own about 7,700 payphones. There are two amendments that we have in front of you.
Jenny. Okay.
The dash 10s are very similar to the dash 12s. The substance of them is that it gives public payphone owners and operators the ability to apply to the PUC for a refund of the money that they pay into the Universal Service Fund. Having observed this committee before, I will not go into a great level of detail on that unless the committee is interested in hearing more. I see this basically as a correction of an oversight out of Senate Bill 622, payphones were not included in exemptions that were provided to the cellular telephone industry and others. We think that's an oversight that needs to be corrected. The fiscal impact is relatively small, $200,000 a year, perhaps less. And in the event that this committee decides that the previous issues are too complex to wade into for this bill, we offer the Dash 12s as a gut and stuff. Happy to answer any questions.
Tell me, yes, Senator Bayer.
I'm trying to grasp this issue here. I don't think it was an oversight. I think we made that decision.
Well, I
time is a way to grab a hold of some more money for the infrastructure fund.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bayer, I was not representing the payphone folks last session. Their feeling of it was that our primary competition is the cellular industry, and we are essentially middlemen. The Universal Service Fund was essentially set up to help the major carriers develop telephone infrastructure around the state of Oregon, primarily helping the rural areas. We're the middlemen. We provide access to a machine. And this is an industry that is very small. It's very much on the bubble with the rise of the cellular industry, with prepaid phone cards, with 800 dial round, that sort of thing. This is an industry that is on serious decline, yet we still are one of the very few options available to some folks in the community that don't have any other access to phones. And so what we want to try and do is, to the extent possible, maintain our competitive position in the market by giving them the ability to apply for the refunds. So that's to say, I was not part of those discussions in Senate Bill 622. That's reflecting the characterization of the issue from my members.
I don't believe it was an oversight. There may be merit in your argument, but I remember distinctly it wasn't an oversight.
Did I hear you? Cell phones don't pay this charge?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
So pay phones do and cell phones don't? Which is
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chair, yeah. There's a reason for that.
Okay.
It's the infrastructure. The Universal Service Fund is used to subsidize putting phone service out in the rural areas. It goes back to the 30s. It's a hardwire issue. The reason the cell phones,
they don't have that issue.
They're not part of that network.
What's the PUC position on this?
We have not had extensive discussions with the PUC, Mr. Chair. When they took a look at these amendments a week or so ago, they didn't express any concern to me.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'm just, it's two years ago, it's too long to remember all the details. I just remember we went into this lot and Senator Nelson may have a better memory than I do about why we did that. There were reasons why, or maybe somebody else in the audience does, there were reasons why we structured it that way in 622. I just can't recall what the details of the discussion was at that
point. Where was this bill before? This got mixed up, that's why you're bringing it.
There, Mr. Chair, there was an amendment that was put forward in House Bill 2727 in the Conference Committee.
Never been a bill.
That's correct. That's
so
correct.
Never had a full hearing.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. And one thing I would add in response to a comment that you made, Senator Bayer, in developing this concept and the amendments, we worked pretty extensively with Senator Nelson's office. So he was aware of the issue and didn't have any concerns with that.
And the PUC is okay?
That's my understanding. I don't want to speak for them, Mr. Chair, but they did read the amendments and said we don't have any major problems with it.
What are the minor problems?
Let me rephrase that, Mr. Chair. They didn't have any problems with it they expressed to me.
Well, Mr. Chair, let me ask you, if I may. Can the way the Universal Fund is supposed to operate is there's a certain amount of money that goes in there that's sort of the fair amount that has to be spread by everybody who uses that hardwire system? It's to subsidize that. So to the extent you, and it's probably not enough money to be significant, but to the extent you take somebody out of that, it's going to cost somebody else. Is that a...
It's going to, Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, it's going to reduce the total amount in the Universal Service Fund. I think that's certainly true. The number is pretty small. Is it going to come then on the backs of somebody else?
I got in the back by the incumbent service providers. I don't know.
We have had conversations with other folks in the telecommunications industry that also no one that I'm aware of has any problems with these amendments at all.
Make a difference? Doesn't make any difference. Don't care.
All right. Let's. So we got some 10s and 11s. Chair moves the dash 10s. Anybody still awake? So ordered. Chair moves the 11s. Okay. So ordered. Chair moves 2659 as amended for the DuPass recommendation.
I'm going to vote no. Is it an earlier bill? Because now I can see this stuff at this stage of the game. I feel like it's before. You know, I may really can't. I just listen to a phalanx or a legion of people who live with this stuff, and they're not together at all, Mr. Chairman, very frank with you. Now I just hear this bill's never even had a public hearing. At least, wasn't that what I just heard? This bill, wasn't that just the bureau asked questions?
Never read a bill.
And then I listen to my PUC commissioner here, and at least on the little sidebars, it's like, you know, I mean, he knows more about 622 than this guy, and yet he is having some memory problems, not intentional stuff. And I'm not trying to be disrespectful to him, and you want me to just, and I don't mean you want me to. I'm sorry. I don't mean to give too long an explanation, but I'm just going to be
a Senator Cordy votes no, and they'll fix this in the PUC if we screw this up.
Maybe they will.
So cost doesn't change, just who pays for it.
You want to carry this from later? You okay with carrying it?
Huh?
Sure. You know,
yeah.
He scares me.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay, that's all for today.
Crime of corrections.
Oh, the memorial.
Didn't we do that?
Yeah,
we did.
We did.
Okay, we are adjourned.